Is it too, okay. So I'm going to shift a little bit from what Dr. Polkowitz and Dr. Nissenfeld spoke about, but all of the issues that the two of them brought up unfortunately ring bells in my mind. This morning, actually, as I was, my husband was leaving to IU, and I was preparing with him last night for this a little bit, he said to me in the morning, he said, Efrat, I figured out how to shut my email. Just let the phone ring on the BlackBerry and shut. I mean, I don't know, I guess you could all figure that out in a second, but it took him a little while. So this morning, he said, I'm going to morning Seder, and if you need me, you could call me, but I'm not looking at emails because I'm getting too many reply to alls and too many nonsense emails that he can't keep up with. And the level, like you're saying, the level of concentration that he would need to prepare whatever he's preparing for Shia is going out the window because, including myself, we just email him all day long. So that's that was his contribution. My focus or my words of presentation are just to start off, I wanted to say that it's also, these are all messages for myself also. This is not just directed to the women in the room, but it's really to raise alert, to raise consciousness on some of the areas that I'm finding, not just in dating and just life itself, so that you could just all be more conscious about it. And as Dr. Polkowitz used the word, mindful is really the right word. So when the first luchos were given, there was kolos and there were brachim, there were fireworks and firecrackers, and that experience unfortunately didn't last. It says that the kolos and the brachim, the luchos harishonos, were broken. The second time the luchos were given, which was later, so celebrated on Yom Kippur, Rashi comments that it was more quiet, and Rashi says that ein lecha yafa minatznius, that it was more toned down, it was more quiet, and that luchos presentation is the one that lasted and the ones that we still have today. Similarly, to connect the link, the Kohen Gadol, like what's the holiest day of the year? So really it's Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, the holiest time of the year, of that day, is what we read about in the Avodah, is when the Kohen Gadol would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim by himself and talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on behalf of Klal Yisrael and try to make a kapara from all of us. It says there, same thing, that ein habracha shora ela al davar hasamui mina ayin. It was mysterious. It was hidden. Nobody really knew what he was saying. Same thing when Chana was davening for a child. They thought that she was, intoxicated. She was talking to Lachash. In Halachos of Tefillah, it says, we speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we speak quietly. You shouldn't go into shul and stand next to somebody and hear everything that they're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Most of the relationships that we have today, whether it's parent to child, or whether it's to a teacher that you, or a Rebbe, or a mentor that you're close with, or it's to someone that you're dating seriously, or God willing, or Tasha, when you'll get married, it's your husband. My concern, I shouldn't say mine, a concern, sorry, is that when we share too much information, we share everything with everybody, slightly we're eroding the preciousness or the uniqueness of whichever relationship we're talking about. So I'll give you an example. I went to the orthodontist with my daughter, and she's 14. So we're sitting in the waiting room, and a mother and a daughter came in. I don't think they were Jewish, but it's totally irrelevant. Could have happened with anyone. And they sit down, and the daughter was using, I don't know if it was a BlackBerry, but something. She was texting somebody else, and her mother was talking to her at this very same time. And her mother, you could tell that they were close, like they had a nice relationship. It wasn't as if they were strangers and they were waiting for the orthodontist. And the mother said to her daughter something like, I was so excited today to read on your Facebook page or wall, you know the words, I don't know Facebook well, that you're a Mets fan. I couldn't believe that I was reading that you're a Mets fan. I was so excited. You know that your mom is a Mets fan. And I was just so excited by it. She was excited because the mother's clearly a Mets fan, and the daughter was posting, during lunchtime. She said, oh, I posted it during lunchtime, my lunch break, that, very into the Mets. And I was just listening on the side, and I was thinking to myself, here's a mother, and here's a daughter, and they're very close. And if clearly to the mother it was so important or so special that she's a Mets fan, why should she be reading it on a wall or whatever you want to call it, the Facebook page, that her daughter likes the Mets at the same time that her 300 friends are reading the same thing? If her relationship is so special with that person, wouldn't she want us? I don't know that the mother processed it the same way as I did, but I, as a mother, was thinking to myself, I would want that my daughter would say that to me first before the rest of the world knew about it. Another example. A few years ago, one of my brothers was about to get engaged. So I remember the night before when I took my children into the room and I just said to them, I have such a secret to tell you. Tomorrow, whichever one it was, tomorrow, don't tell, but someone's getting engaged. Or another example, tomorrow we're throwing a birthday party for Bubby and Zadie or Saba and Safta. Don't tell anybody. Aside from the excitement of whatever the event is, you will God willing see, and I'm sure you'll see this in your own relationships, there's a certain specialness with whoever's receiving the message of how special that person feels, that only you and him or you and her know that information. The minute you just plaster and post everything everywhere, I'm wondering whether we're eroding from the kedusha itself of whatever the relationship it is. And again, I'm not just speaking about dating, I'm speaking about any relationship of value. So I was speaking to one of the Rosh Yeshiva about this, not my husband, a different one, in preparation for this. So his mashal was something like, you know, he says, tell them, like, if they had a very, 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 very expensive piece of jewelry. I don't, so I could talk about it. But if you have a very, very, very expensive piece of jewelry, and he said, would that girl or woman wear it all the time, wear it every day, wear it everywhere? No, she would probably select a few times a year to wear that. Very special times of year, very holy times of year, whatever those days are of year. It's the same kind of thing where I'm wondering in general of whether when we share too much information with everybody, and yes, as the other panelists spoke about, some of it stays forever, and a lot of it is harmless, like harmless, really. Sometimes people take me to Facebook pages to show me what it's about, which is good, and they show me, you know, different people's Facebook pages, girls, boys, married people, it doesn't really matter. But in watching it, oftentimes I say to myself, or I ask, why is that information important? Why did we have to post that she likes whatever it is, that restaurant or that book or that those are harmless situations. But I'm just saying, like, I one time had a couple where there were some issues and the woman so showed me her Facebook page and she wrote things like, you know, my husband had a bad day at work today, and she's posting to her friends, how could, you know, what should I serve him for dinner? So I was thinking to myself, well, as a husband, why would I want that all my wife's friends would know that I had a bad day at work? I come home and I would deal with it with my wife or my husband. It wouldn't be something that just has to be shared and shared and shared. We also learned it from Shira Shirin and from our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we should model some kind of preciousness, uniqueness, very special connection, whether it's through the computer or whether it's like they spoke about, whether it's verbal communication, of just there has to be something so special. That another good example is if, let's say, you have a very best friend and you hear from someone else something that's happening new in her life, or she's moving and you didn't know, but you heard from all of her other friends who are more common, and that special friend who you thought was your best friend from childhood, you would think she would tell you first. How come she's telling you last? That's what I'm talking about. Okay. When Hashem was having a conversation with Eliyahu HaNavi, and Eliyahu was asking Hashem, what are you like? How could you, you know, he was trying to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like. And he answered, called Mama Daka. There's like a soft, low voice. I'm not with the rah-rahs. I'm just more of a dignified entity. We don't really understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like. But these are traits that I would think as young, beautiful women, we would want to emulate, of being, I'm not quiet, as you could tell. So not saying that we should be reserved and quiet. We could be outspoken and out nice, but always with dignity and just a certain carefulness of what is just shared and exposed and just out there. just to lead to my conclusion, the other thing that I think is important, those were all positive things I'm talking about, but sometimes even in posting things, you know, sometimes I even read on OnlySimchas, which I'm addicted to, so don't think that I'm not on the internet. I'm connected to my email all day long, like they both describe. But sometimes, you know, you have to say to yourself, OnlySimchas was just an example, are everything that we post appropriate? Are we causing people jealousy by posting things? Are we, anytime writing Lashon Hara or Rechilas, you know, sometimes people will blog, you know, they went to a lecture, they went to a shiur, they went to hear a rav somewhere, and then somehow the link will come back to our house and say, look what this person's writing about rabbi or professor, this is not just a rabbi. And then you read that whole other side and that inner monologue of the person who's just typing fast like I do, and just thinking, as Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to say, not everything one thinks has to be said, not everything one says has to be written, not everything one writes should be published. And we've gone from a point of you think, you just type, from thinking to publishing. I don't mean publishing in the press, but realizing that once you write things on the computer, it has a world of its own. How many times do I forward people's emails, cutting and pasting, taking things out that I should or I shouldn't? And again, this is an alertness to myself as well of, wow, I wasn't so careful in that email, and look where it went, and look what it cost me. And I didn't mean to say something negative about him, but look what happened in the extent of it. So just that we should all be careful on kina, on rechilas, on lashon hara, and all those issues that, even though sometimes we just mean it harmlessly, and sometimes it's freedom of speech, we could write whatever we want, we could say whatever we want, there is a price tag along with it. And just to reflect back to what I said at the beginning, if one feels that there's a certain relationship that's precious, you know, again, of course with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but there's a certain friendship, a certain courtship, a certain parent-child relationship, that is not being satisfied enough by just you and the other person, perhaps it's a time to take a step back and say to yourself, like Dr. Buckwitz alluded to, and Dr. Nissenfeld also did, and so did Charlie, to take a step back and say to yourself, what can I do for that special relationship to make it that much more precious and make it that much more intimate, where nobody else has to know what's happening? It's just between me and him, or me and her, or me and my mother, or me and my father. And it's nothing, or me and my grandmother, whatever it is. And, you know, again, there's so many examples of intimate relationships, of making that relationship itself so rich and precious that you don't really have to disperse it and share it with everybody else, but you're getting satisfaction in itself from the relationship, as opposed to everyone needs to know everywhere he took me, or everywhere, you know, my mother takes me shopping, or everything I did that day, whatever it is. Just to give you a last frame of reference. Sometimes I teach kalas when I have time. So I was teaching a kala before she got married, and a few days before she got married, she came for her last session, and I was, you know, trying to wrap it up with her. And then she says to me, she's married, so don't worry now, she's fine. But at the time, she said, you know, him and I share so much information with so many people. I'm not so sure what's unique or what's private only between me and him. I'm not sure what is special about our relationship because everybody knows everything. And before I even answered the question, I just thought to myself, if she wasn't a kala and she wasn't someone that, you know, you would not need to know, that was profound. What she just explained, just her question was profound, because what she was telling me was that throughout the courtship, everything was plastered, everything was shared. Everybody knew before her when she was getting engaged. Everyone saw the helicopters. Everyone saw what he wrote. Everyone saw the flowers. Everyone saw everything. But that a girl 3 days before her wedding can challenge herself by saying, I'm not so sure what I could talk about, just me and him, because I'm not so sure what's unique. that was very disheartening and very frightening. And from that time when that happened, I realized myself, and then, you know, again, I found her Facebook page and I found other things, not, of course, not going in there without her permission. But I was, through studying this, I was realizing that maybe the couple just needs time together. And Baruch Hashem, they're fine. You know, they learned it through me, and, you know, other people got involved to help them. But it's not, they weren't an example of a problem. They were, you know what I mean? It wasn't unique to this couple was having issues. That example is really representative of much of what's happening in a society where we just share it with everybody.